Life can be chaotic. If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment add to the chaos. Use ShipStation instead. With ShipStation, you never have to worry about shipping and fulfillment again. Whether you're running a business out of your garage or you have multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your business's growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating repetitive tasks. Plus, you'll save money with the best shipping rates from global carriers. ShipStation's industry-leading features help you deliver a better customer experience. They'll get accurate and faster shipments, along with automated tracking updates with your branding. And with up to 88% off UPS and USPS rates, and up to 90% off FedEx rates, ShipStation is the fastest and most affordable way to ship. Calm the chaos. Switch to ShipStation today. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yep.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, 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 what's going on, everybody? It's the Hammer coming back at you from the Rugby Rant. And it's actually episode 200, a landmark episode. And while it may seem like I am flying solo today, I am in fact not flying solo. First of all, the original plan was Scott and I wanted to have a very special guest on for our 200th episode. Unfortunately, Scott is got some personal things. We're going to do it last week. I was in the hospital for crying out loud, dealing with the norovirus, but I'm recovered. I'm healed. And, Scott had to bow out this week, but our very special guest is sticking with us. And, it's none other than one Ty Baraga. Welcome to the show, Ty.
Thank you very much. It actually feels a little odd to be brought onto the show by you. It's normally me doing the introduction here, but you know, what better opportunity to return to the show, come out of retirement, dust off the boots and the mic, so to speak, and for the 200th episode. So thanks for bringing me back in here.
Yeah, no worries. We'll give you some white shorts and we'll make sure that nobody tackles you or throws the heart of a question at you so that you stumble and fall and, you know, bruise a bone or break a limb.
Love it.
So folks, we have an interesting show on tap for today. Again, like I was saying, the plan was to have all three of us and kind of have a reunion of sorts because Ty was going to make some time for us and, you know, life caught up with every one of us.
Rob, you know, it's actually quite funny though, because, you know, we're going to be talking about the show and how it's evolved. But one thing I want to be able to point out, you and I being here and Scott not being here is just the same story, the repeating itself, because you can only have two of us in a room at a time.
Right. That's right. True story, folks.
We have tried numerous times to be able to get all three of us in the same location, but it's never happened. So this is just true to form.
Right. One time, you know, Scott came in for the New York game and stayed at the house here. And we got together for the first time in person, you know, in real life. And then for the 2023 final, Ty drove in. We did some work, you know, pregame work, and he stayed at the house and we enjoyed the final together and met for the first time in real life. So it's true. Really, it's you and Scott can't be in the same place at the same time.
I know. That's probably a fair point there. That's kind of, you know, on par with what today is really about, right? Is, you know, talking about the history behind the show and how it all came together. And here's me taking the, you know, the lead here again. I hand it back to you.
Yeah, well, it just so comes so natural for you, right? I mean, it's something you did for so long, for 3.5 years, and it's kind of what you did for, you know, your semi-professional life, working with Glendale Raptors and doing some work for USA Rugby, yourself, and of course all the work that you did on the show, and then even in some of your other professional endeavors, you know, with being a you were an auctioneer for quite some time for art auctioneer, both on cruises and then doing other work outside, you know, within that realm, within that landscape. So it's something that you're very comfortable and natural at doing, for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, you give a guy a microphone, and if he's got the experience as an auctioneer, you just can't take it away, you know?
You can't take it away.
Give me a stage and I'll perform.
Yeah, that's right. There's no hooks around here. I can't give you a hook. Right. So, folks, like Ty was saying, the show, what we have on tap for today, we're going to do a little bit of an around the pitch. Each one of us brought something to the house here to talk about and around the pitch. And I think there are some two really salient and important elements that we're each going to talk about independently. And then we're going to come back at you with a discussion of the evolution of the show and kind of interweaving the evolution of the show, how this show came about, where it originated, how it started, some of the, you know, ups and downs of the process, some of our favorite points over the 5 years that the show's been in existence, but also weave in there talking about, you know, just where has rugby come as we looked at rugby through our lens as the Rugby Rant. And it would be really interesting to get some feedback from some of you fans that are watching, you know, as to what you've seen as a result of, you know, our show and what we've done and how we've tried to deliver rugby to you and draw fans in. Because remember, it all starts with, growing fans or growing rugby one fan at a time, shall we say. So, something really near and dear to our heart. And how has it, again, had an impact upon you and changed perhaps how you've seen rugby? So we're going to get after it here, folks, in just a couple minutes, but we're going to hear initially a word from our sponsors. All right, we're going to talk about sponsorship in just a moment. I want to add that to one of those layers that we'll discuss when we come back to the rant component of the show. But like I said, want to touch upon around the pitch, and I know Ty has something pretty important that he wants to talk about and at least make everybody aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, thanks for the stage. But the big stage is really the Rugby World Cup, and that's the top prize in rugby and all around the world. And the next edition, of course, is in Australia 2027. While typically we might pay attention to the powerhouses of rugby, those tier one nations that we often refer to them as, but I feel like the unsung heroes can often fly under the radar. And I want to be able to take the opportunity to highlight that as we step away from the traditional powerhouses and focus on those up and coming emerging nations. And this means countries like Spain, Portugal and Romania, who have all recently qualified for the 2027 Rugby World Cup, which is fantastic to be able to see countries like these continue to perform at the highest stage possible for rugby, because without that experience, they wouldn't have the opportunity to grow. And in some cases, they're returning to the stage after a very, very large absence. In fact, I believe Spain being one of those, their last edition, their last visit to the Rugby World Cup was way back in 1999. Now, for those that do remember, they narrowly missed out and only because of a technicality at joining the 23 Rugby World Cup because of an eligibility clause that was enabled where they had fielded an ineligible player in their international side that led to them actually qualifying, that was then led to their disqualification. So they'll definitely have something to prove this next time around as they continue to be able to grow and stamp their authority on the world circuit as a rugby nation, true, and can tackle any nation out there. Romania also has, I think that they have been a part of 9, I believe, maybe even this could be their 10th Rugby World Cup appearance here, or however many we have. They have been a part of many of it, and they're an important nation to be able to have in Europe as an emerging nation. And then the other one I wanted to be able to highlight is more recently Portugal as well. They'll be doing their second one here, the first being in 2023 there. And they'll be doing back-to-back, and that's another great opportunity there. But the one that rugby fans a little closer to home should be paying attention to is how the Pacific Nations Cup will be playing out in 2025. Of course, that is North America's opportunity to be able to punch their ticket to the Rugby World Cup. Unfortunately, 2023 left both Canada and USA out of that opportunity there. So we'll be, of course, trying to be able to rectify that with 2027 on the horizon. They have a mountain to be able to climb, but they've definitely got something to prove and the grit to be able to do it. As we see new leadership, new blood being introduced, and we've seen the positive results there. And I'm sure many fans back here and, of course, in our neighboring country of Canada will be focused very closely on the performances in the Nations Cup, where it will be actually hosted on American soil, perhaps an advantage, I don't know. But we do know that Japan has already secured their spot, having finished the World Cup in their ranking, giving them automatic qualification. That leaves the others of Samoa and Tonga to be able to really battle it out there. So we'll stay tuned and, of course, stay close to the action, because what may seem like it's a couple of years away, really, that journey begins here and now as the qualification heats up and it comes down to the wire where the USA and Canada will show what they have to be worthy of the world stage one more time.
Yeah, I think that was a really good analysis and breakdown of where things are at as we start to head closer to 2027. And obviously, you know, we have our eyes set on qualifying ourselves, because that's a stepping stone to 2031 as we're all waited with bated right. breath, you know, about the World Cup coming right here to our shores. And we need to be ready, not only as a rugby public, but also, you know, from a national team side, of course. So great points. I think important for people to be reminded of, because it's right around the corner and we need to get some yeoman's work done so that we're ready to host everybody here in 2033, by the way.
For sure.
Yep. All right. So my around the pitch, I want to talk about some things that have made headlines in the rugby world, particularly here in the United States as it relates to the MLR, and that is the new trial laws that are set to happen here in the MLR. And we, of course, know that some of the trial laws have been adopted in the recent internationals with the Six Nations, the biggest one being the 20-minute red card. We've seen that play out already in the early stages of the Six Nations. But some of the new trial laws are really garnering a lot of attention and criticism out there in social media. And so I just wanted to run those down for you. And again, this is a great opportunity for you guys to, who haven't heard of this, who haven't really thought about it in any way, to think about it and give us some comments and let us know what you think about these trial laws. And in particular, the ones that are a concern are around the scrum. So just to break it down for everybody, we have a removal of the scrum option on a knock forward when it's thrown forward into touch, and thus it's a line out only. So that's kind of an interesting option there. Again, trying to, I think the intent here, folks, is to speed up the game and get the ball in play much quicker when you have a line out as opposed to a scrum, there's less of a chance that there is a scrum penalty and thus another or a scrum reset, and therefore puts the ball in play much faster. Law 12A, a knock or a throw forward into goal and grounded by either team is a goal line dropout, not a scrum. So again, that's an interesting change. Again, you know, a kick from that goal line dropout speeds up the pace of play without a scrum on that, you know, that 5 meter scrum. Law 15-17, failure to play the ball after 5 seconds of use it is a sanction, and it's a free kick, not a scrum. This, we already know about the use it. It's actually come into play in the fall internationals a number of times, and some frustrated scrum halves have shown their exasperation with an official. And there's been some critical points in which it has impacted play a little bit, but nevertheless, that's an interesting one where it's not going to be a scrum. It's going to be a free kick, excuse me. And then law 16-17, unsuccessful end to a maul. The sanction is a free kick, not a scrum. And again, I think a lot of fans out there have been lamenting it, particularly some front row forwards, because they're concerned about loss of jobs, are really concerned about, you know, taking the scrums out of the game. And they believe that it's a very integral part of a game, and it gives some teams who are bigger in size more of an advantage. And I think about, for example, one of those teams being South Africa. And I know Ty is very sensitive to this because, of course, they have the bomb squad, and South Africa really relies upon, you know, that second unit to come in and fresh scrummagers on the world stage there. And so I'm kind of curious what Ty's thoughts on this are.
I'm so glad you handed it back to me now. It's like on the edge of my seat waiting for, like, he better call me in here. You know, so, I mean, obviously, as a South African, I'm partial to it, though. But in general, I just love how important the scrum is to rugby union. And the farther along we go to being able to remove it, the closer we go to playing rugby league. Yes, I know that might be an argumentative point, but really, the scrum is an underrated tool and skill. And until you've, as you pointed out, been in the front row or the tight five or been adjacent to it, you really don't understand the complexities of it. Until you become an analyst and a strategist of the game, you don't understand its power as a tool. However, I contradict myself, though, for a moment. In the interest of creating a more entertaining brand of rugby, I applaud the attempt to quicken the game and also to be able to possibly uncomplicate it, because if refs don't know what's going on, how are you supposed to at home? so it is important. And really, that whole law trial slide that you put up could have just said no more scrums, and that would have summed it up. but I get the reason behind it. I hope it achieves what they're trying to, which is to quicken the pace of the game. But I often wonder at what expense.
Yeah, it's unintended consequences. It's something that, you know, I've talked quite a bit about whenever we incur a change like this, is that for me, I guess it's too much too soon. You know, I think sometimes we try to always tinker with the game time and time and time again. It's very remiss of education, where you get to some schools and you know, your administrator gets in there, and every year they feel like they got to have some new big initiative. And you're like, right, I mean, let's just get what we do right.
And like, and at a bigger level.
Right. Yeah. Well, and what I mean by that is, like, if officials aren't all understanding what's happening in the scrum, let's do a better job at educating them so that we get a better management of the scrum from officials and from front rows. So let's do things to encourage that.
Yeah. And certainly, just adding on top of that, you know, we're talking about this localized to the MLR, but if we expand the conversation to rugby at a national level, we have to be able to be aware that while players become used to new laws and trials, they aren't necessarily adopted at all levels of the game, i.e. the national level game. So when you have the USA players playing domestically here at the MLR, used to one set of laws, and then have to play an entirely different structure and gameplay at a national level, how does that translate? I imagine it may be confusing when you only have five games at the top level, but you have an entire season here. Well, which one of yours is going to be your default setting, the one you play more often?
Yeah, and I think that can be a very frustrating thing for players. And I mentioned the scrum half, you know, the ball establishing offsides, and the scrum half can't be harried and things like that. I know that change posed some difficulties for a lot of scrum halves in the middle of the international season as opposed to the domestic season. So it was quite a bit of a change. So I agree with you. I think that can be one of the biggest challenges. And do we really want to create that kind of difficulty as we ourselves as a country are heading into qualifying for 2027? Is that what we want to do? I'm just not sure. So I agree with you. Some interesting thoughts there. But post your thoughts, post your ideas, and certainly contact us. Let us know if you're interested in getting into this conversation, because I'm pretty sure that Scott and I will be breaking this one down, pun intended, at a later rugby rant episode. Two good ones there, Ty. So for folks to nibble on and think about as we progress through the MLR season. But again, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what's happened over 5 years through the lens of the rugby rant. Clearly, my dog is ranting and has some things to say about what's going on. So I know Nola can't wait to get after it. I know Ty and I can't wait to get after it. So we're going to do that. And don't forget to get yourself in the Super Brew Challenge here. All right, so we're back. We're going to get into the rugby rant right now and just talk a little bit about, you know, the origin of this show. Before we do that, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't remind everybody that they should get in on the Super Brew Challenge. Again, you go to, you download the app for Super Brew, use the search term Seth Malt, and you can get yourself involved. We have almost 100 players right now that are involved. And here's the important thing, folks. This year, this season, we have some great prizes. We, of course, every year, and we're going to talk to Ty about this a little bit because it ties into the origins of our show. But this year, it's really cool because, as in past years, we've had a weekly winner, and that weekly winner has won a prize. And you don't have to, you could win 1 week and never play again for the rest of the 18 weeks, and you can still get in on the prizes. Or you can come in late and still win some prizes. But we have the weekly winners. This year's weekly winners are getting an $80 Macron hoodie, courtesy of the Rugby Rant and Macron. It's going to be a Rugby Rant branded hoodie. It's going to have a cool saying on the back. You can even get your initials on there just below the Macron logo. So that's a weekly prize that we're giving away. And then we have some great end of the season prizes for those people that stay consistent, stay involved, have a little luck, but also probably project a little skill, and they're going to get some great prizes as well. And we've got some good ones on store. They'll be announced as soon as we have them in hand. But on that note, Ty, since we're talking about the origins of this show, how did the Super Brew Challenge come about? This is what I think the fourth season we've done the Super Brew Challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we dive into that, I want to clarify something. I'm allowed to actually win prizes this year, right?
You are. Yes.
So
you'd actually have to really make sure you're engaged in the MLR.
Right. I'm coming off to one of those hoodies. Okay.
Yeah.
So
that'd be special.
I mean, obviously, it's a great fun thing to be able to participate in. And I think that that's kind of really where we wanted to be able to look at it and how it came about and its origin is we wanted to be able to keep fans engaged. You know, it's kind of been a center of what we do. We felt like, you know, that fans are really some of the greatest assets we have to rugby in North America, and keeping them engaged in a fun, interactive way that was approachable and easy. Super Brew is that. I believe you were the one who first brought it to our attention, but mm-hmm. you know, when we were doing it, it was a wonderful way to be able to connect with fans, the banter that came from it week after week. I mean, you know, between the three of us, yourself, Scott, and me, we would compete against each other, but we would also have a rugby rant one, which quite often right. did the worst out of all of us.
Right. Usually, because I try to... You know, when picking it, we try to throw a curveball in there and maybe catch right. lightning in a bottle with one of the teams.
A real Christmas for us. And we're like, oh, well, let's just pick right. the one that we wouldn't have picked over here just to balance
right.
it out
right.
a little.
Right. I know it allowed us the freedom to not feel like we didn't have to pick our favorite team.
Right.
Like, you know, you tend to do as a fan, right? You never want to pick against your own team. And so it allowed us to pick against our own team when conventional wisdom might say that's the best idea.
Right, so, right. But with the Super Brew, though, it's, you know, it's been wonderful, not only for the fun factor that's in it, how interactive it is, how easy it is to participate, but how great it was to be able to get the backing of our partners and sponsors at the time, which really kind of legitimized yeah. it as a true competition with something in it more than just the bragging rights that you got the opportunity right. through first. And I believe it was the Rugby Shop and then it was Rugby Now. Right. So it made it, you know, that everybody had an opportunity to get something out of it. And it became such a great tool for us to be able to talk about our picks each and every week. It kind of drove some of the content in the show as well, because it gave us a mm-hmm. chance to talk about the upcoming fixtures and then highlight the successes from the previous weekend as well.
100%. So folks, jump on. There's still time. You can still get involved. You can still win, you know, one of those. Like I said, you in this case, you don't have to buy anything. You're going to get a free hoodie. It's a cool piece of merch, has a cool saying on back. And it says, if you don't want to get punched in the mouth, you should play table tennis. So I figured that was pretty apropos for a show called The Rugby Rant, right? So anyway, get in on the action while you still can, while you can still win some of those prizes, those fabulous prizes that will be announced soon that are coming your way if you are one of top three winners at the end of the season. But let's get into the show, Ty. One of the ways I want to start talking about this show is its origins. And what I don't know that everybody understands is just, they might have heard the story of how the Rugby Rant came about, but I'm not sure they understand where the seeds germinated from. And I think having you on to talk about that just for a couple minutes is kind of important for understanding the origin of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was all kind of just organically came about. And if we go right back to the beginning, I came to the US and in 2019, it was late 2019. And, you know, somebody who was new to the land, I'm like, well, how do I connect with rugby people? So I started connecting online, try to learn more about rugby. Where is rugby in America? I discovered that there was a professional league recently started. And that, of course, was the MLR, very much in its infancy. So I decided, okay, you know what? Let me dive in head first. And I found that this has always been a passion of mine. So let me use my passion to connect with other people. And I'll get to be able to network and have like-minded people to discuss something I enjoy with. And that's where I actually just use social media. You know, it can be a blessing and a curse. In my case, it helped bring everybody together that I could talk about something from home and make me felt like I was easily becoming accustomed to this new land by sharing the sport and the love of it. And rugby's been one of those great, powerful things that just brings people together. One of the great things and the selling points about rugby is that we get to be able to connect with others. And I did that through the MLR Fan Zone. Started a Facebook group. The overwhelming presence and support that came from it was outstanding. Before you knew it, we had grown to a couple of hundred members in a few matters of days. Then it was thousands. And so it continues to grow and just take on a life of its own. But through that, I had the opportunity to be able to be a part of the conversation of American rugby, become a voice, and two of those voices continue to be louder than the others. And who am I talking about? Scott and Rob. I believe if I look back, it was about players, three in fact. It was Bastereau. We were talking about the influence of Rene Ranger, the All Black, who at the time was with the Raptors, the Colorado Raptors, or Glendale Raptors, whichever version they were at that time. And the debate was, have they made the impact that they were promised to make? And in particular, somebody was taking shots at Bastereau, and of course, that's Rooney.
Okay. Yeah.
And Scott was there to defend it. And so it became this massive back and forth debate between the two of you that was a borderline argumentative debate, nevertheless heated. And I just thought, man, we need to bottle this and put it in something that's magical. And you fast forward and it became eventually the Rugby Rant podcast. So, right. And that's really where the catalyst was. And I'm sure you remember it quite fondly.
Oh, absolutely. And I throw in there Ma'anonu. So we have these three players. Right. I think it was structured in a way it was like, of the three, which one has had the biggest impact? And so it wasn't even that I was saying Bastereau sucked or he was fat or slow. It was simply that I was saying, look, of the three, I think he's had the least significant impact upon his team.
Right.
Scott was upset. Corsett was close to his bone because, you know, Bastereau was playing in New York and Bastereau had to switch positions because
of the number of injuries. Get heated about rugby at all.
Right.
Especially in New York.
Right. You know, so we went back and forth. And what I think for me has always stuck out as a rather salient and an amazing point was, you know, when I think about COVID that happened in 2020 and things shut down in roundabout March and April and May, and I think about, well, how did it change our lives? And so much of it is negative. You know, so many of the changes of that COVID brought about was negative. But I think there was, for me, I was able to see a few positives and pull out a few positives from COVID. And this was one of them. I'm not sure that our show develops if COVID doesn't hit at that time.
I 100% will agree with you there. And it's really how I personally changed my focus from rugby. And I should kind of rewind a little bit here. And one of the great people I met through rugby and its greater rugby community online was Dallin Stanford, who, as you know, and many of our fans will know, was actually a big important part of us kind of launching the show as he joined us for the very first episode. And for those
he gave us legitimacy, right? I mean, that's why we pursued him so hard, right?
Yeah, and at the time, you know, he was already a very successful commentator, announcer at all different levels of the game here locally, but also internationally.
Right.
And now, of course, we know that he's reached the heights of being an announcer at the Rugby World Cup on several occasions and at higher games too, including the semifinals. And at one time also got the opportunity to commentate for his home nation, South Africa, not also at the 15s, but at the 7s game too. So bringing him to the show in our first episode, as you said, brought a little bit of credibility to us because while they didn't know who we were or what we did, they recognized the voices of Dallin Stanford. And that was something that he lent to us. And he was only with us for the one show, but it gave us the opportunity to be able to jump out onto the rugby scene and be taken a little bit more seriously right from the get-go. And
Ty, I'm going to double down. on why COVID played such an important role in the development of the show is because, like, keep in mind that Dallin was really busy before things shut down, right? And when things shut down, sports shut down, there's no in-person games, there's no announcing gigs.
Right.
And he's kind of left sitting there going, what the hell do I do with my time? He's out there in LA with his wife. And we kind of invited him.
I remember he was communicating with like people in their average day life, like picking the groceries out of their car. I just couldn't take the conversation away from the action, you know?
from rear window, except front window. And he's watching people walk by making some comments.
You still got to hone your skills and practice wherever you can.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I do remember that component.
Dallin, we've got to get you something else to do, mate.
Right.
But, I want to be able to give a personal thanks to him, though, too, because, you touched on this in my introduction. For those that don't know, and for many of those that do know, it was so important for me personally, too, because as COVID shut down, I was only blossoming as an announcer in my own right, having had the opportunity to audition and then become the stadium announcer for the Glendale Raptors.
Right.
I think I got 3 games in. I'm like, man, this is awesome. Amazing. Right. I love it. By the way, it's all done. It's stopped.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the MLR fan zone grew. We got into conversation. The debate grew. We grabbed Dallin. We grabbed you. We grabbed Scott. And then the first episode 1 started. And here we are 200 episodes later.
Right. Well, yeah, 200 episodes and probably another 150 interviews. So, you know, we're somewhere in the neighborhood of well over 300 and some odd. I don't want to call it. The rants are episodes, the interviews are interviews, but in entirety productions, you know.
Well, at one time, well, for a long time, I should say, at one stage, we were doing 2 episodes per week when you separated the rant and the interview. And for folks who don't know, that's a lot of planning, a lot of time executing, way more time editing.
But again, go back to COVID. Like, you know, let's be honest, you know, we're all sitting at home. We were working.
Right. We were working.
But like for me in education, there was limited things that I could do in my role when I, you know, as a dean. And I didn't have an hour commute a day. So there was another hour I was getting back that I was able to devote to the show.
So instead of you listening to podcasts on your drive, you decided to start one.
Right, exactly.
Makes total sense.
right. I want to get away from Dallin for just I want to tell one interesting piece. I think at the time too, maybe this is not how naive we were, that we kind of thought Dallin would stick around a little bit.
Oh, I think we were way too controversial for him in the first get-go. You know, with his wonky haircut, which was a COVID cut that just obviously was not a good choice in life in general. We threw jabs at him, and then we were poking. And I think that's what kind of was a part of the hook of where we began is, you know, we were focused on the debate. But we were very much so embracing both sides of the argument. And that was perhaps refreshing and maybe why we managed to be able to become appealing to the larger audience in North America and why we're still probably doing it today is because we managed to be able to not only just, you know, pander to the positive, 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 positive. We actually asked a couple of tough questions and sparked the conversation. Yeah. And in doing so, we really helped be able to educate the audience, give them a voice at the same time. And it kind of centers around the philosophy that, you know, we grow rugby one fan at a time, which is still very much stuck as the mantra right throughout the 200 episodes. Yeah. And while it's not a perfect fit for everybody, you know, the guests, we gave them a platform and we gave them an opportunity to be able to voice their opinions. And I think that it was unfiltered in many ways and it was great for that same reason.
Yeah, not only that, with the interviews, we were giving fans direct access to players and personalities within the league and within USA Rugby and Rugby Canada. which I don't know that they really had prior to our show. I mean, maybe, again, it's my naivete, if you will, to believe that we're kind of, we were always on the forefront of doing that and giving fans access. But I really felt like that's one of the things that helped set us apart from perhaps mm-hmm. some of the other podcast shows here in North America.
Right. I will give credit to the Rugby Wrap-Up, who was my first introduction to sort of say rugby journalism in the US, yeah. as I, you know, dived in to learn more about it. The consistency at which we provided rugby insiders and access to them, I think, was also one of the critical points. And for those of you who have ever tried to be able to do anything similar to this, it's really easy to start. It's so hard to keep it going. Consistency is what made it work. Sticking around week after week, producing a show, arranging guests, ensuring that you coordinate it, making sure that the edits are out on time, that we publish at a consistency. That's what led to a large part of why the show is still here today, I think.
Right. And I throw a shout out. You mentioned it. You're not wrong. Rugby Wrap Up, I mean, credit to Matt McCarthy. He's still going at it strong, and he's absolutely, one of the leaders in the forefront of American rugby podcast, as is Bill Baker. And it's kind of interesting because Bill was doing the interviews too, but Bill right. was kind of focused on Eagles overseas. So it was mostly, you know, USA Eagle players that were, you know, playing in domestic leagues overseas. And so we kind of took that and really went with the MLR side of it, Rugby Canada side of it, to provide a much wider range of access to professional, high-level professional rugby players.
You know, a little bit of an inside story for fans, and those who will be listening to this are, I'm assuming, going to be among the most engaged fans of the Rugby Rant podcast. So I'll give you a little bit of history here. The name Matt McCarthy, of course, synonymous in rugby across the U.S. for a variety of reasons, but really I credit him as my first introduction to the game here at NA level. So when we started to be able to try to be able to make inroads to the rugby community ourselves through the show, like most, we try to be able to draw attention to the shows. So we're posting here or we're popping it over here. And the Rugby Wrap-Up, kept putting it onto his social media. And it's like, hey, guys, come on. This is like advertising Pepsi on a Coke site.
Like, yeah, you
know, right. But you know, and then that, to your point, is like, man, you know what? I you are right. And it's because we had such a great view of what he did. And we're like, man, you know what? We like what you do. We want to be able to learn from those that are better than us and who've been doing it longer. But to your earlier point, we need to find a voice of our own too. And then that's kind of where it morphed into where it focused on the fan first. And of course, the engagement level, the education parts, and then access to all the rugby insiders.
Right, right. So I want to turn our attention a little bit more now, Ty. And again, having been on that journey for 3.5, almost 4 years of a 5-year journey, can you remember some more salient or poignant moments? Perhaps I want, maybe we'll start with the lows first. Is there's, and we could talk about lows within, you know, maybe behind the scenes too. I'm not afraid to talk about that. But also some things, you know, again, that we experienced were perhaps points of critical mass for us as we developed and went on that road and went on that journey. What sticks out for you?
Well, first thing is the learning curve, right? We were just trying to be able to figure it out. I mean, I had to basically teach myself how to be able to edit. Likewise for you, we knew nothing about it. So it was a steep learning curve. But I think one of the greatest challenges is when we had so much energy and passion, and we kept knocking on doors for opportunities to be able to interview rugby players, coaches, insiders in general, administrators. And we kept knocking on those doors and we kept knocking on those doors and we kept knocking on those doors. And I feel for the longest time, we struggled to be able to let those doors open just even a fraction to give us the opportunity to be able to give this, our platform, our space, to the MLR and get them to recognize that we're there to try and spread the gospel, you know, kind of make sure that we help you build the profile of the game in the way that we know how, is to engage fans. And they're such a critical part of it. But I think that when we got to that point, those lows of just persisting and pushing through and trying to make the contacts, get with the right person. And then eventually it came out to the high, which is to be able to have George Killebrew, the then commissioner of the MLR, join us for the preseason, chose to be able to join us for a full length interview about the upcoming season. And then again, at the end of the season, to give us the opportunity to recap the successes versus failures and talk about the trials and tribulations. So, you know, we had many struggles along the way. And I think that looking back, it was first getting the rugby professionals to recognize what we're trying to do is to help them. And while we may, of course, end up engaging in very heated debates, at the center was the focus to support the game and to help grow it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Killebrew. I think, you know, when we talk about things that helped legitimize or at least helped us along our journey become more of a relied upon, steady, committed, you know, podcast, almost journalistic entity within the rugby landscape, you know, Dallin being one, and that first show, you mentioned George Killebrew. I remember that was a big win for us when you secured that. I mean, when you got that nailed down and we had George on, for us, that was a huge win.
And I think it was really for you, we got our first coaching interview with Nate Osborne, because, of course, you're Mr. Nola. So much so that you named your dog by the same name.
So,
clearly you're a fan.
Right. And then Gary Gold. Right. To be able to have the U.S. national team coach the first time, having him on the show again, that was a big feather in the cap. So some of those things for us we had really stretched to where we wanted to be at, where we wanted to get. It was a recognition of all the hard work that we had all put into this endeavor. Right. Pretty amazing stuff. And I want to throw a shout out while I can to Nick Feeks. I think he was our first interview ever.
He the first interview or first player interview?
I thought he was the first interview.
You're probably you're probably closer to correct than I am.
So I think he was our first interview because I had some connection with him because of LU and of course
the Gold. And then that's why I'm remembering Nate Osborne as the first coach then.
Right. Exactly. I want to kind of harken back. There were two things that stuck in my mind. And one of them is the MLR Fan Zone was humming along and we were really using that as a vehicle to launch the podcast,
right?
To connect with fans. Cause we had somewhere in the neighborhood of 2000 or 3000, you know, followers, or you had that many followers. And you remember what happened all of a sudden, you know, one day we found out that the account had been hijacked.
Oh, geez. You know, as you were saying this now, I was thinking it was going there. I'm glad you brought it up because I had missed that. But yeah, that was definitely one of the lows. But again, it turns into a high. So for those of you who don't know, yes, the MLR Fan Zone was a wonderful opportunity to connect with our community online, rugby fans from across the nations. And we had people from all four corners of the globe just looking in into the conversations we as fans were having, interested in the growth of American rugby. And then we were focused on the MLR, did of course at the time include the Arrows, so we extended it to Canada. But overnight, one time, just trying to log in, gone. All of it gone. And actually, here's how it actually happened. I don't know if you remember this part. Dallin Stanford's name is going to come up again because it was a copied profile. I was social engineered. They actually then copied his profile, made it a direct copy, used the photo taken from his profile. Then I got a friend request. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, great. Of course, I know that's strange that I'm getting a friend request from a friend. Absolutely, except okay, a request to be an admin. Sure, you know what, Dallin, you've helped us out. Absolutely, request. Immediately, all the credentials are taken.
I did not know that part.
You didn't know that part?
No.
Oh, yeah. So Dallin was single-handedly the hand that helped us rise and inadvertently in our demise.
That's so funny. I didn't know that. But so, yeah, I think that was one of the things I think for me that stood out. Like it was crisis mode for the three of us for a couple, probably 48 hours.
I had to start a new group because, you know, now the tactic is the ransom, right? They want you to pay them X amount of money for it. So here I am.
Which
you know,
we had paying, none.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you're barking up the wrong tree, dude.
Right.
First of all, there's no money in rugby, and there's certainly less money in rugby in podcasting. In fact, I think at one point you were paying to do it. So not only in time, but in the funds and everything else. So, but here's how it came to be that we managed to turn that negative into a positive, because the one thing rugby players and the community and everything do is we stick together, right? We love our own, and we make sure we got each other's backs. And we had fans step up. And as I opened up the new group, abandoning the old, because I just didn't want to go through the hassle of trying to retrieve it, although I did try, didn't work out. We've all got our stories of why we don't like Facebook, but it was the place that was the home for it. It was the logical place to restart it, opened it up, the new group. And within a week or two, we ended up with very similar numbers that what had taken more than a year to achieve previously in the former group. We did almost overnight in the new one, as people from all four corners of the online world galvanized and just all directed the energy and traffic to that one place. It was amazing to be able to see.
Yeah, and it allowed us an opportunity too to kind of hit the reset and rebrand and figure out how we were going to work the show into a greater brand without really violating MLR. You know, copyright infringements and logo infringements and things like that, if you recall, that we really had to be rather careful because we'd started to get enough traction at that point that we were garnering attention of the league. They knew we existed. They knew our relevance. And we just had to be careful about how we danced around with that bear a little bit.
Right.
So one of the other things that was interesting to me, and this was for this is behind the scenes, probably outside of Ty and Scott, myself, I don't know this, but I don't know that everybody realizes how difficult it is to get three different people who've never met before in person to actually engage in a joint business venture. And granted, it's not a huge, you know, revenue business, but it was something that we had all envisioned at least breaking even, or maybe, you know, paying for our
well, we got to justify the time we spend on this to our spouses somehow.
Right. And so trying to get us of a similar mind, get us running the same direction, and creating a business entity so that, you know, we could continue to do what we do. And there were some really hard conversations that happened along that way, if you recall.
Oh, for sure. Heated debates. And, you know, it, the passion that we had on screen was even
real.
More so behind it. And especially as you know, when you put so much time and effort into something, it becomes, you know, this wonderful passion project that is a blessing and a curse at the same time, because you love it so much. You're happy to give that time to it. But then you're also fighting to be able to keep that alive and
protect it.
Yeah, protected too, you know, and you know, we did have those tough conversations. We had to talk about, you know, the opportunity where there's three of us. What is the responsibilities? How do we divvy up the tasks? Scott and I had arguments about this, as you obviously know. You were, you know, trying to be Switzerland as much as you could. You are, of course, a really good diplomat as well. And, you know, that's the great part that you've played. And, you know, kudos to you. In many of those scenarios, you were the one that kind of grounded us both and kept us back on track with what was most important, which was the project that we were doing, which is this today, the product of it. But yeah, it was a lot. And I think that it also just happened to coincide, as you pointed out, with the fact that we were becoming a recognized force We were being seen as legitimate rugby journalists in our own right. We were receiving media credentials with the league, with the teams. And so we were being taken seriously, and we were also then taking ourselves seriously as well. And that's why we had to have those conversations, as difficult as they were, helped us grow and solidify what we're doing. And that it eventually also led to the fact of us being recognized by partners that were included, the rugby shop initially, who was, a thank you to them as well. They were the very first to be able to dive in and give us the opportunity to be able to work with somebody as a partner, to generate revenue and what we do, and use that to be able to go back into this, to be able to build it again and again. And later it was Rugby Now. It was, a multitude
American of Rugby Outfitters.
Yeah. So, and rugby, I think that coffee. That's one of the big things in our evolution. That was one of those critical points where we finally had somebody saying, we like what you do. Mm-hmm. We love the voice that you have, the message that you're sharing. We believe in it so much that we want to be on that journey with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's been a journey. So, you've talked about some of those high points for yourself. Like, what else has it brought? What other highs, what other successes, what other, can you remember some rather poignant, really great things, that this experience brought to you? Because I know it challenged you. I know it challenged you on many different levels and personal levels. Yeah. Not only, in your in terms of your personal and professional and business levels, but, what did it do for you in terms of give you that euphoric high that maybe rugby used to give you when you played?
Well, yeah, I like to be able to say, let me think about this. Here's one. So going back to the pandemic, we all suddenly ended up with more time than we had ever before. And like many people, I was left with too much time on my hands to be able to say, okay, well, what do I do now? I was at the time in a career that wasn't fulfilling. So I said, you know what? I'm going to be able to teach myself a new skill. And I challenged myself to learn how to become a video editor. I later then used those skills to be able to edit and create what was eventually the Rugby Rant podcast show. And in doing so, I learned a lot of skills in marketing, pitch design, proposals and things like that. All these skills that I never thought would be a part of running a podcast, but ended up becoming so critical to our success when we talk about the business side of things. But then as we began working with sponsors who came on board, they too needed assistance in other areas. And I got the ability to create, video edits that eventually, once I had the opportunity working with our partners, Rugby Now was the first one. Rugby Shop was the first one, then Rugby Now. Through them, they asked me to be able to create commercials that were eventually shown on all of the national broadcasts. So whether our games were on, MLR games were on NBC Sports Gold, the local partners in Boston, it was on TSN Network, it was on Fox Sports 1, 2, ESPN. And then I think back now, when I go watch last season, and I'm not sure if it's going to be there this season, but when you see that Rugby Now advert, it is my voice that you are hearing. And that is just kind of a cool, neat little thing for a guy who sat in his basement, who taught himself how to be able to film edit while watching YouTube tutorials, has a nationally broadcasted advert.
For sure. Absolutely. And that's what I'm talking about, that you for Kai, like, hey, I did that. That's me. That's my work. And I think for you, that was a definitely feather in your cap. In addition to getting the Rugby Rant on TRN for quite some time, for about 2 years before they sold out the Globin, right?
I think that was also another big thing that kind of helped us solidify our place as, in rugby. And at the time, it was suggested by one of our partners that we should target this, because we kind of had a little bit of an inside opportunity to be able to be among the first. And I believe I might be corrected, but again, another feather in our cap, in particular for the show itself, that we were the very first fan-run, fan-produced, edited show to be shown on the Rugby Network. And I'm not saying that we were the first podcast, let me clarify, but we were the first one entirely run by fans, for fans, whereas the others were backed by the MLR in some part, whether mm-hmm. they were directly commentators within the league or were staff on the payroll. But we were the first that was entirely fan run and produced that was able to be shown on the Rugby Network. And again, shout out to them for that opportunity. And mm-hmm. that in turn gave us the platform to be able to encourage and attract even more sponsorships. So while we certainly didn't get paid for that, we did get incredible benefits from that opportunity.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, we're nearing the top of the hour here, Ty, and I don't want to give too much credit to Matt McCarthy, but we're going to have to wrap this up at some point. But nevertheless, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you as we start to move along here is that even though you're not involved, obviously personal life had to, you know, moved up in your priorities, had to take the top priority. Do you miss it?
Well, give me a microphone again, and I think I've been talking most of the time, right? So it's something that, yes, it's exciting and it's fun. And here's the truth and the hard fact about it, though, is we got to a point where it was an incredible amount of work and you become almost a victim of your success in your own ways. And because we'd set out really high standards for ourselves, where we wanted to produce a great show every week, sometimes twice a week, but we also wanted to make sure that we provided a quality product, and we continually challenged ourselves to lift that product, whether it was the quality of the content or the production or the sponsors, that takes a lot. And when that became more like a job, it was time to step away, because now I have the privilege of just popping on to be able to be as a guest and enjoy the fun in it again. Would I, you know, and that's really where it all started, and where I'm happy to be able to return. And yes, I do miss it. I love the conversations, and I will always want rugby to be a part of my life. It has been such a critical part of my life up until now and will continue to be as it moves forward. So much so, as I mentioned to you before the beginning of the show and before we started recording, that I am now going back to rugby roots and perhaps, you know, practice what I preach, as I've said so many times on the show, is grassroots rugby is where it begins and where we should have our focus. And that's where I'll be this year, is coaching high school rugby, and I'll get the fun there, and I'll get my opportunity to be able to share the game I love with an entirely new generation of rugby fans and players.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. I was ecstatic to, you know, when you told me the news that you were going to be going into the coaching side of things and working with you, because after all, I think that one thing that most fans can agree upon who listen to the show is that if we're going to get anywhere closer to 2031 and that moonshot vision that Scott Lawrence has in actually getting into the, you know, final round of the knockout stage, that it's going to have to be grassroots rugby that drives it. There's not enough of that. So it's great to see it, to give back to the game in that way and stay in touch with the game in that way. Because I know you're passionate about it. I know you love it. I know it's deep inside your soul, as is the rest of us. So it's great to see you continue with it.
Thank you.
So with that, folks, you know, that's going to draw us to a close. It was fun to wrap it up, to talk a little bit about that five-year journey, especially share some of those memories with Ty, especially some of those memories that were, you know, stuck deep back in my brain that I didn't realize were there. It was great to be reminded of them, and I appreciate it, Ty. And you're always welcome back on the show. You know that. So anytime you want to jump on, just let us know, because it's such a pleasure to have you on and kind of rekindle what started the show and the passion that you have and the love that you have for the game. So folks, stick with us. We're going to come back next week. You know, obviously it's going to be after week one. We're going to have an opportunity to see all but one of the teams play in week one and talk a little bit about the game. Again, if you're a fan that wants to stay engaged, wants to stay involved, have your voice heard, jump on the Rugby Rant. Let us know that you want to get involved, and we're here for you, because after all, we're growing rugby one fan at a time. And so in order to do that, we need fans like you in order to grow this game. And so don't forget to stay engaged by getting in on our Super Brew Challenge. Some prizes to be won every single week. And it's not that you have to get a gift card. Now we're getting actual merch delivered to your door, courtesy of the Rugby Rant and Macron. Jump on Super Brew app, use Seth Malt as a search, and you too can join in on the fun and winnings of a free contest. So, you know, be mindful of that. But folks, as we say in the Rugby Rant, I think that we will be seeing you at the next. But before we do take that outro, I want to thank Ty for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure, man.
Thank you very much, Rob. Great to be here again.
Thank you. We'll see you, mate.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning, so you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.